saw a tiny flame started to burn, now a bright beacon, shedding its light throughout the world, reaching ever distant beachheads. Indeed, we must explain what hath God wrought. Now then, what of our adolescence? What are the lessons of that? And where do we find ourselves today? And what might the future hold in store for us? So well do I remember the day in Smithy's living room when we knew that this thing was working. And we said to ourselves, we must call a meeting here in Akron to see what we shall do. It has taken 3 years of hard work to produce 40 recoveries. Within gunshot of us, men and women are dying. How shall we let them know? Well, I, being a businessman, a promoter, immediately began to think in terms of big money and big organizations. And I said to myself, well, don't we need hospitals? These hospitals don't like drunks. We should have our own chain of hospitals, and they can produce all the money we need. Look at the money these dry-out joints make. And then, since it has taken such a long time to bring about these few recoveries, shouldn't each of us get subsidized and become missionaries temporarily? And go out to other cities and start these centers. And then Smithy and I reflected, well, certainly we ought to make a record of some kind of a pamphlet or book in which we could set down our experience and how this thing has worked so far. Well, I'll never forget that evening when fateful decisions were taken in T. Henry Williams' living room. T. Henry was no drunk, but what a friend he was. There must have been some 18 of us present. I went on enthusiastically about these great plans, and I saw the faces of my fellows fall. And they began to say to me, Bill, if we bring money into this thing, it's going to spoil it. If we hire people to do this thing, it's going to perfect more. And as for books, well, who's going to write books? And what we quarrel about them? Well, there was great force to what those people said, and there is still great force to it. They held up a warning finger. But I paid too little heed. You know, I'm a pretty good salesman. I began to argue, and Smithy supported me. He said, but we have to do something. We at least have to. Otherwise, our message will get gobbled, will get distorted. Haven't alcoholics at a great distance got a right to know what has happened here? So the conclusion of the meeting was that, if I thought we needed money, I'd better go back to New York and raise it where there was supposed to be plenty. And having very big ideas, full of enthusiasm, I got home and immediately bethought myself of the Rockefeller Foundation. I figured there'd be plenty of dough there. But the Rockefeller Foundation wasn't interested. They said there was a depression on, they felt a little hard up, and besides, this new movement I described of 40 people, didn't seem to have any special classification. It wasn't exactly religious. It wasn't exactly medical. It wasn't exactly scientific. It wasn't exactly educational. It really didn't fit in any category. Well, I felt terribly cast down. Made some other approaches for money, for hospitals and missionaries and books. Nothing happened. Until one day, I happened to stand in the office of my brother-in-law, who's a doctor. He'd heard these complaints of mine before. He said, Why don't you step in and talk to Dr. Shirley Wynn? He shares an office nearby. Used to be the commissioner of health here in New York. He would understand what you're talking about. So I talked to her. Found myself soon talking to Shirley Wynn. And he said, yes. And he said, I have a feeling this has great promise. And like yourself, I feel that this needs a tremendous lot of money, or will in time. Now he said, how about the Rockefeller Foundation? And I said, no, he said, I've got a better one. He said, over at the foundation, they really wouldn't understand this thing. He said, the man who would really understand is John D. Rockefeller himself. Well, I said, doctor, that's fine, but what about an introduction? Maybe you could give me an introduction to the Prince of Wales. How shall we reach John D. Rockefeller? And just then, my brother-in-law spoke up, and he said, when I was a young fella going to school, I used to know a girl, and that girl had an uncle. And I think he was somehow connected with the Rockefeller charity. I don't even know if he's alive. I don't know that he would even remember my name. But suppose I call up Mr. John D. Rockefeller's office and see if there is such a man around. So he made a simple call on the phone to Mr. John D.'s personal office. The voice of Mr. W.S. Richards, one of the greatest friends this society will ever have, came on the wire. He said to my brother-in-law, where have you been, Leonard, all these years? I'm so glad to hear from you. Unlike me, my brother-in-law is a man of very few words. So he said quite abruptly, well, Mr. Richards and I have a relative here who thinks he can do something for alcoholics. We'd like to tell you the story. May we come over? And said the old man, why, surely, he said, walk right over. So we soon find ourselves going up 56 stories, walked into Mr. John D.'s private office, and there sat dear old man Richard. He listened attentively to the story, the man 3 years old. He said, yes, he said, I'm deeply interested. I have some friends around here who I think might be interested. Shan't we have a meeting? Oh, what a sigh of relief I breathed. I said, my Lord, now the big money is really in sight. And the old man said to me, he said, I'll be glad to tell Junior about this, meaning Mr. John D. Junior. He said, won't you have lunch with me? Well, I felt that for a promoter, I was really doing very well. So I had lunch with him. In the fall of 1937, there was a little meeting. Some of the alcoholics from Akron came. I think there was one from Cleveland, some of the New Yorkers. And Mr. Richardson and several of Mr. Rockefeller's friends and associates met in John D.'s personal boardroom. And I thought to myself, now, folks, our money troubles are over. Well, each of us told our story. That's all there was to it. The same simple story. And then Mr. Scott, chairman at the Riverside Church, spoke up and he said, well, what is your need? And with becoming reluctant, I let him know that it was money. And he said, but aren't you afraid that you will professionalize this thing? Isn't this purely a work of goodwill? We admitted that it was, but we said also we certainly have to have at least a book of some kind. We have to have at least a little money. And the salesman present convinced these gentlemen that we ought to have some money. And one of them came out to Akron, where Smithy was a little harder up at the moment, and where the first group had started, and where there was a typical community situation. He came out to Akron and went over AA with a fine-tooth comb. Of course, we still didn't have the name AA. He came back and he made a report to Mr. Rockefeller that we ought to have $50,000 right at once, just as a start. Open a rest home in Akron. We'd put Smithy in as the doctor. That would be just a pilot plan, a model for the others. And naturally, there'd be plenty of money for book publishing, and we might probably get a few missionaries. Well, as I have often observed, AA has many, many founders. Time after time, the finger of Providence has laid its hand on a person who has altered the whole course of this movement. And just now, the hand of Providence was touching Mr. John D. Rockefeller. He looked at that report, and he said to his friend Dick, "Dick, aren't you afraid that the money will spoil it? Aren't you afraid of professionalizing it?" He said, "I'll put a little bit, a few dollars in the Riverside Church treasury that you can draw on to help these two men out. But," he said, "don't come back and ask me for any more." He said, "we mustn't spoil this thing with money." Ah, on what a slender thread our destinies have. Mr. Rockefeller has since then has told me that from the beginning this work engaged his every interest. Nothing more affecting has ever crossed his life. And he, who has made a life work of giving away money, that he should say, for once, this time, I won't give. Well, that obliged us alcoholics to raise our own money to publish a book. Stories were written in Akron, a story or two from here, stories in New York, among our friends, chipping in small amounts in subscription money. We finally got the job done. A periodical of national circulation published the piece and then changed its mind. So that at the end of 4 years, when the book had just appeared, the book itself was bankrupt. Every one of us was broke. AA was very, very poor. And thank God that was so. We had a hard struggle through 1939. In that year, however, the plane dealer in this town caused AA by its good tidings to grow so fast here, they proved that we could become large. We could become strong. We could recover in numbers. That was the great news that year. In 1940, Mr. Rockefeller, who we hadn't heard from since 37, suddenly said, "I'd like to give a dinner to tell my friend about this Alcoholics Anonymous movement." Again, we thought, our money troubles are over. Mr. Richardson brought into a trustees meeting the list of the guests. I made a quick calculation and I said, "Gee, these guys will add up to about $2 billion. What do you want?" But again, Mr. Rockefeller gave them himself. And when the dinner was over, his son Nelson, speaking on his behalf, got up and he said, "My father, who was ill tonight, wants me to say that this is one of the most affecting things that ever crossed my life. But fortunately, gentlemen," said Nelson Rockefeller, "this is not a loan movement that needs money." And the $2 billion got up and walked right out of the room. Ah, so our destiny has been affected through methods. Then the next year, you know, the Saturday Post published, and our great growth began. In the days since, we have had a joyful but strenuous experience of learning to live and work together, to relate ourselves rightly to money, questions of prestige, questions of power, to the world outside. Out of this experience, we have been evolving the tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, what great changing since our first idea. Our very first tradition today says the common welfare comes first in all matters touching our unity. For without unity, there can be little or no recovery. We say in AA, in the second tradition, that no human being is to be an authority over us. Our only authority is to be found in a loving God expressing himself through our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. On membership, what a tremendous turnabout. In the early days, we had membership rules which were legion. We feared all sorts of situations and people. We were constantly talking about the pure alcoholic, whatever that is. But now it's all changed. The doors are wide open. We want to be all inclusive, never exclusive. So today, a man or a woman suffering alcoholism is a member so long as they stay there. What a great reversal experience has brought to us. Typically, and very much like drunks, as you have seen, we used to think that we ought to have a lot of money and that that should be somebody else's money. Today, we realize that as a society, our earning power is good. Our expenses are trivial. Of course we'll pay our own bills. For once, we shall be givers to the community and not takers. There was a time when I used to toil with the idea of running Alcoholics Anonymous and down in New York. It was a very pleasant thought until I learned better. But today, every AA group can manage its affairs as it likes, provided they don't seriously interfere with the general welfare of others. Oh, how different that all is. Even our original foundation was chartered to educate and to research, to do all sorts of things, I remember, except lobby for prohibition. But now that's all changed. We know that this society of ours has but one single purpose, and that is to carry the message face to face to the other alcoholic. We cannot lend, finance, endorse, or the project. We know we must stick to that sole aim for which God seems to have appointed. Oh, how times have changed. Now and then, too, we are confused about this matter of our services. People are saying AA is getting to be organized. It's getting to be big business. Lots of quarreling about money. Yes, there is a lot of quarreling about money, but why should there be? Here in the city of Cleveland, maybe 4,000 alcoholics and their families living within 10 miles of this hall. The big business consists in passing a hat in meeting places to pay the heat and light of the meeting. The big expense, which runs all the time, is that of two workers in a little bit of an office. Now, that is very important business, but it is not big business. Down in New York, here is a movement of 100,000 people. We have exactly 5 alcoholics employed down here. Not as missionaries either. Just as secretaries doing, if I might say, a wonderfully good job in helping to propagate this thing, regard its public relations, to issue its literature. Out in the back room, we've got another dozen people who ship books, who keep track of the accounts, who type the letters. Is that big business for a fellowship of 100,000 people? No, not big business, but very important business. We realize then that these services, organized as they are, do not represent an organization of the AA movement. They are merely a few chores which have to be done in order to keep our records straight with the world outside, to issue our literature, and to facilitate good 12-step work. Services of that kind are mostly carried on for the benefit of the million who still don't know. We think we owe them that much. So our services are organized to that extent. But you and I know that Alcoholics Anonymous will never be organized. Now there's another tradition we have which does with controversy. In AA, you'll find lots of controversy. Sometimes, to put it mildly, we act like hell. We can be very cruel sometimes. We can be very thoughtless. Sometimes we gossip maliciously. Sometimes we quarrel violently over our small business. Oh yes, this is no perfect society. We have many sins. But from the very beginning, as though by some deep and sure instinct, this society has known that it can never quarrel over the issues of politics, sectarian religion, alcohol reform, and the like. I have never heard in AA a bitter religious or political argument. As we get larger and the forces which terrify this modern world come in upon us, we shall have to be ever more on the guard against these things. But through these real threats, I am confident we shall never succumb. Then our matter of relating ourselves to the world outside. No alcoholics are the greatest promoters in the world. And yet isn't it a remarkable fact that out of all of us salesmen, you can't find 5 people in the whole society of Alcoholics Anonymous who get their names and pictures printed in the newspapers nowadays. We realize that we must place principle before personality. We see anonymity as a token of our group humility, as the greatest protection that we have. I must confess that I myself, once upon a time, disagreed with every single one of these traditions to some extent or other. I have violated them nearly all. At times, at other times, I have been tempted to violate them, and then the group conscience has spoken to me and said, "No, Bill." The group would say, "You can't do this thing to us. What you propose is good, perhaps, but it is not good enough. Aren't you the fellow who has forever said, sometimes the good is the enemy of the best?"
I think one of the great things that's happened in AA is our changed attitude toward trouble. In the first place, though some might think this a success story, it really isn't. We deeply realize that this is not our success. This is God's success. We see a new use for trouble and problems. This whole meeting, to be sure, has been a time of great joy. All around us we have heard stories marvelous in their beauty. One success is followed upon another, economic and whatnot. But life in AA isn't always like that. At the table last night, where I happened to sit, I guess we drew by lot for places to sit or something of the sort, it was a good idea. A man sat there and in no self-pity at all, told how his wife was suffering that strange dire disease, multiple sclerosis, a creeping paralysis. And how in our simple principles, she had found a new release. And how now she was getting somewhat on her feet. Another told how when his son was killed in action, he had gone at once to an AA meeting, feeling that that's where he belonged. And in the midst of our joy, this assembly has had one great sorrow. One of our members, a great worker in Iowa, made the journey here to see Alcoholics Anonymous come of age. And the day that we confirmed the tradition, he passed on of a heart attack here in Cleveland Hotel. And coming out of the tradition meeting, I met his widow. There she was at an AA meeting. And she looked at me, and she smiled just a little, and she said, "You know, I think he'd want it that way." Now, we are coming to regard trouble in a very different light. When it comes, we say to ourselves, how can we accept this? How can we deal with this? For if God gives us the grace to demonstrate, then this trouble may be a lesson for us. I'm sure all of us are deeply affected by this lay that's right there. Here in America, some of us think lays are rather silly. But this one was. It is a token of their participation in what is perhaps a very historic moment. Sent from an island in the distant Pacific, a token of affection, of appreciation, sent by those who will never come to any AA convention, or even any AA meeting off their island, for that lay was sent to us by the alcoholic lepers from a colony near Hawaii. Ah, yes. God has been great and good to us. May we always be worthy of his trust. And someday the need for our society may pass. And when it has met that need, and if we are worthy of it, I hope God may look down upon us and say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Perhaps there is no better way at this time of parting for me to conclude than to read to you the last brief paragraph written in Alcoholics Anonymous 12 years ago. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellow. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.